I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. We keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Yeah. What? On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Lisa Bolakaja, can't even speak her name. Lisa Bolakaja is out today.
Are you avoiding me, Lisa? Seriously, every time I come up in
Nerdist
here, the street nerdist is in the streets. She needs to be up in here.
It's a mystery, for sure.
It is. It's such a fantasy.
And Linnell ain't here either. I'm not having it. Too many dudes up in here.
Anyway, so we got my man Tracy Grant in the house sitting in with
back
us.
Again.
Writer.
Nice to be with you.
Yes, of course. Yes, of
Call
course.
Call me up. Off the bench.
Bench.
But I get
the sixth man. The sixth man.
The sixth man is here.
The sixth man award.
Hell yeah.
Put the ball in play. Get the yards after the catch. I will score the clutch points. My dude, nice to be with y'all. Shout to Linnell. And Lisa, you know.
Girl.
Let me just, I mean, an email. A tweet, a text, or something.
Damn.
I don't think I've even seen you since Barack was president.
Oh, my Damn. God. Okay, I'll tell you what. This is the episode.
My wedding. We're shim shim, right?
Holler at you, man. You know, something. We're supposed to be stopping.
This is the respect race. Episode, but after this episode, we start to clown you.
Damn.
Okay, you need to show up.
Yeah,
okay, you're going to get clowned after this. You need to show up, Lisa.
Let's look.
You are missed.
That's what hilarious. It is.
Okay.
Then we got my man Chris Derrick in the house. Writer, producer, director himself. You just did your big reading last week.
I know. It's awesome.
What?
It's fucking awesome.
How'd it go, man? Nice. Tell us.
So I had the reading for the Orson Welles Project last week.
Awesome.
It was fucking amazing. The guys, Sean Sharma at the SAG After Conservative, put together this group of actors. Absolutely amazing. It was because it ranged. It was all ranges because it was an international cast.
Right.
He got these international actors to come in. Who it was just. It was really amazing. I hadn't. It's something I recommend for all writers to get their stuff table read, to have actors come and read it. And you know, it's like I've had all the films I've shot, short films, table reads, stuff like that. I've done it for other features just to get ideas of it. I hadn't had this type of experience where I felt so. Emboldened by the actors. The actors brought their A game because they loved the material.
Good, good.
They just were telling me the whole time I walked up there, we love this, this is so good. Like, get this made. It's, you know, I had two producers who have access to money there, and they were very excited, talking $20 million to make this movie.
I want access to money.
It's just you know, it was just amazing. It was amazing to hear people do those words, and I was really excited. I mean, there was a scene that I had to rewrite. Like, I kept rewriting it and rewriting, and I was rewriting it. Is this
leading up to it or after?
Well, you know, I was. The last 2 months I was doing a polish for the reading. Right. I just wanted to make a few. There was a little part I wanted to add to it, just a little part. And when this woman read this one line, there's a scene in the movie near the end where this the German or the Viennese assistant, his personal secretary, like reads in the riot act. About, you know, like she's quit him for like a year and a half and he's finally got all this money together and he's like, can you come back? And she gives him this, you gotta tell me why speech. You know, like, she's like, I've been to your, I've been inside your insane asylum for 2.5 years. Why do I want to recommit myself? Is like basically what the thing is. Mm. And it brought a tear to my eye because this woman gave it such vitality that like I didn't even expect when I wrote it. And I spent like a long time trying to get that scene to sound right in my head. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is gonna be good, this is gonna be good. And just like what she brought to it was just beyond what I even thought about. And I was like, this is why actors are so great, because they take the material and just bring it up like to, that, like, to bring up another notch.
I just want
to
say that's why it's so important to do a reading is – there are things in there you discover that you don't know. You remember, when you read something and when you read something, it's different. So you interpret
different movie in your head.
Yeah. And so one of the things I've figured out over time whenever I do a reading, and you guys have both been at different readings I've had, and you've been in one of the readings
I've had. That was fun.
There are things that I think are kind of like a chuckle are actually funny.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, it's just a chuckle.
I did not.
You know?
Yeah, that's the thing that like I told them afterwards. I said, you know what? I don't consider myself a comedy writer. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself someone who actually makes people laugh that much. Mm. So I didn't know if any of the jokes would play. And they were laughing so much at a lot of these little like quips and things that's and good. Everything. And I was like,
but you know, you're giving them, their job is to, part of their job is to find those hooks.
Yes.
And to like climb the mountain with those hooks.
Yes.
So of course,
if it's there,
if they do their job right and you did your job right to begin with, both of you should come out of that. Both the actors and the writer should come out of like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah. That's exactly how it was. When it was over, the people were like so like, oh my God. This is like the conversation with everyone afterwards was just amazing. And the thing that, and another thing that kind of I was concerned about is that because I'm writing a movie about a historical figure who was prominent about 80 years ago, who's not a musician. I feel that the musician biopics have a different kind of ability to last longer.
The music brings
the music
but
brings
Orson Welles in specific, I think you have no problem.
But the concern I had was always kind of nagging at me is people who are in their 20s, do they know or do they care enough? Are they interested enough? And there was a couple actresses who came in to play some of the younger roles in the piece. They were like, because the actors had to read it ahead of time. It wasn't a cold read. They were like, I was so interested in this that I had to do research on him just to know more about what this was.
We love that.
Well,
you know what, they should. Like, that's their job.
Well, let's finish the introduction.
I'm sorry. No, We're going. We're moving.
I'm Jeff Thorne. I didn't get introduced.
Oh, you ain't nobody.
They make me come in here when they got to fill a chair. I write stuff. I produce stuff. Whatever. But one of the things I've noticed generally, and people want to blame millennials, but it is millennials. It's just like self-centered laziness. People don't know the history of film in our business. People, writers don't know the history of it. Actors don't know the history of it. And I don't mean like going to history class. I mean like you should take your job seriously enough to know why things work the way they do, who did what. Why is that name significant? You don't have to like take an 8-hour documentary every, you know, every week. But you should be conversant. You should know the difference between Steven Spielberg and Antonioni.
Oh my God, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You don't have to have a long dissertation about it, but you should know. Right. These are significant things, and it will help you ultimately if someone says, I'm doing a film about person X, or I'm doing a film in the style of this particular group of people. So if it looks weird to you, understand, I know that I'm doing it on purpose so that it matches up with this.
And it was successful.
Right. You know, it will ultimately serve you to be less in your own mirror, is what I say. Mm. Right.
You know what? I'll never forget the story. I have two stories. Never forget the story. I remember we were pitching a kind of like a heist movie to Jennifer Love Hewitt's company.
Okay.
And, you know, what I wanted to do is I wanted to use an homage to that, who are those guys?
Right. Oh my God.
From Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because she's getting chased, and I was like, and we're never.
Pinkertons, yeah.
And the people are never getting close enough so we see who they are on the screen.
Who are those guys?
I was pitching that in the thing, and I noticed the second time I said it, there was a look in the executive's face like, what are you talking about? We haven't met these people, you know? And then the pitch went through and they were like, at the end of it, they were like, this is really, really good, but we never met the people who were chasing her. And I was like, you ever seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
That's part of your basic education, man.
And they were like, what's that? I said, have you heard of the Sundance Film Festival? Of course.
Where do you think it comes from?
Where do you get the name from? Where do you get the name from?
Well, it's sad, but it's also ultimately it's why the business hurts itself, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't, you got to respect the game. You got to respect the game. Sure. Every NFL player knows the history of the NFL. Right. I guarantee
they all know who the hell Vince Lombardi is. They all fucking know.
Down to the guy, the lowest bencher who never gets to play, knows everything about the NFL.
You learn the hard way. I once had a meeting, forget with who, to ask me who my favorite, what my favorite film was. Before I could answer, he said, before 1990.
Hmm.
So it was before 1970.
Boom.
Before 1960.
Yep.
And if I hadn't had some basic reference, you know, I'm at least aware of a Casablanca,
right,
et cetera, I would have looked crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, some of these movies, I know they're black and white or they're made in a time you don't really care about or whatever. You'll be surprised. Some of them are freaking hold the
well,
hell up.
I think most of them hold up. I think, you know, it was an interesting conversation that never came up during the recent Oscar run.
Yes.
Two films up for Best Picture that were black and white.
I know.
No one even talked about that.
Well, they were busy arguing about other shit.
And I was like, this is bullshit. Like,
Jeff Thorne is cringing.
Like, this is actually unprecedented. This is an unprecedented moment. It's probably been like, I don't know, 55 years since
a black and white film?
A black and white film.
No.
Two were up. Two were up. 55 years, probably.
Two, you're qualifying by saying two at once.
Two at once. Okay. Two at once.
Yeah, I mean, people lean away from it. It makes sense. But everybody's yelling. People are yelling at, what's his name? Soderbergh for shooting a high-flying bird on his cell phone. Like, how dare you? It's not pure, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I'm using the equipment that I'm using, man. This is the equipment that's available. Can you tell if you didn't know that I did that? What's your problem? I'm getting shots I couldn't get with a bulky-ass camera. I'm getting in places I couldn't bring a giant-ass camera into and a giant crew and all that. Also, hate to break it to you, but the quality of filming on these iPhone 7s and whatever the Android version of it is, they're talking 8Ks now, right?
Yeah.
So, like, why are you yelling at this poor man? Let him make his movies. If you don't like him, don't go see him. It's pretty simple,
yeah.
Right? And this whole thing about, I just wrote a thing on you. I saw you, you liked it. This whole thing about Netflix releasing movies and they're trying to limit the ability of Netflix to release movies both as Emmy contenders and as Oscar contenders and they have to be in theaters only in this way and all that stuff. That's just people trying to protect their territory. And I'm like, that's not, in theory, that's not what these things are about, right? I mean, I don't really believe in award shows because it's not like a sports competition, right? It's a bunch of people voting on what they like that year, which by definition is subjective. And who's in the Academy? Everybody's always talking about the Academy. I'm like, but who are they actually? Most of them are in our age, even now, as old as I'm getting. I'm still not old enough as a normal Academy member. I'm not white. You know,
you're not white.
This stuff, I know, it's shocking. It's shocking. But like, who are they actually? Then you can sort of judge what they're going to like. And then you can't really blame them for being who they are, right? And also, who are they to say what's excellent, right? Steven Spielberg himself spent 20 years, almost 25 years, making like amazing motion pictures, right? But some of them were two genre. Or they were just off to the left of whatever, he got no Oscar consideration.
Well, no, he got consideration. He just didn't win. He just didn't win.
Even up until the point where he's getting, when he first got in his Oscar consideration, even that, it was
E.T.
like,
was up against, you know, right. Gandhi and lost. And I believe he had contenders for when he chose to do the dramatic films.
But prior,
like every time,
prior to
you know,
the first break in. He was already a big deal making these great movies, but they were basically genre movies,
mm-hmm.
and nobody wanted to give him the time of day. Right. Meanwhile, the whole rest of the world's like, make more movies, make more movies. So do I care I don't have that gold statue, or do I just go keep making movies?
Well, so okay, so to me, I think there's two thoughts here on this. I think that one is that, you know, like, yes, you're going to go make the movies. and you should make the movies. And I feel that Spielberg, you know, like after he lost for E.T., he did make some great movies after that. He made some extraordinary movies after that. I think that there's a time where people of his stature and things like that, because this is the thing that I think is crazy about the Academy, is that people want to feel that they are part of that.
They want to be in a cool kids club.
That cool kids club. But the thing is that, you know, like so Spielberg makes Jaws and Close Encounters, he's still in his 20s.
Right.
He's still trying to be a rebel in his own right. But when he goes around and he makes Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan, he's now in his late 40s, and his peers are all in that group. And he's in the group anyway, right. so he's kind of like, do my peers respect me?
But it's weird because he and Coppola and Lucas and a couple of the other guys at that time, they reset the bar.
They
came like, well, we're doing it like this. Too bad, right? And everybody, people don't, because you're young and you don't pay attention to your industry. they don't realize the backlash that all of them face.
They all completely. And you know, it's like I reading someone saying the other day that, I mean, I'm sure it was at the time too, but it's more and more considered now, is that The Godfather is an art house movie,
right?
It would never get made today if it never came out and it wasn't that type of. The impact of that movie hadn't happened. It still wouldn't get made today because it's an art house film.
Right.
It's episodic as hell, but it works as being episodic as hell. That's why you love it. I mean, to me...
And look at... I'm watching kids, and I'm saying kids because they're in their 20s or something. Yes, I consider you children. I would not date any of you. Okay? You're all babies. But they're discovering Dracula. Right? Coppola's Dracula. Right? When it came out, people are like, what is this craziness? But now it just fits. Right. Like, people just go, this is a cool movie. I'm like, you don't understand how insanely provocative that was.
And also how complicated the time he had making that movie. Like,
yeah.
There was this whole, I might have said this before, there's this whole story. A friend of mine had worked on that movie. Is like, he was like one of the editing interns or something like that. And Coppola has the silverfish is thing where he edits and makes food there on the set. And it's like, it's in a, what's that thing called? It's in one of those.
Oh, you mean one of those big honey wagon type things?
Yeah, but it's silver. You know those.
Okay, old, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I forget. Lucy used to drive one.
But his whole plan was,
well, I'm not that old.
Is that he wanted to shoot Dracula on location in Transylvania.
Right.
And shoot it in black and white with like hand crank cameras and shit like that. Unfortunately,
Right.
Hearts of Darkness came out,
and everybody
they were like, "You're not going on
vacation. Boy, you must be hot.
You are not we just going saw how on your location.
No,
you don't go on location
you
ever again.
You never leave the country again. Ever."
That's not gonna happen.
You think we're crazy? We saw that shit.
You went wild. You shot for 270 days.
That's right. You literally had your own country going on over there. You better stop it. No, you can't go. No.
But you know, it's interesting to think about. I guess there's that whole debate about Netflix and what you can show. It's like the thing that I think is funny is that I think people think that Netflix made Roma. Netflix didn't make Roma.
No, right.
They just acquired it.
It was already played.
Right. And people are like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of like,
everyone is not interested in that detail.
Right.
They don't want to talk about it. They see that red in and they think, oh, this is what they made.
John Rogers posted, which I was like, these people don't understand how the game has changed. It's a lot of these people in our business who are older than me, more established, obviously considerably more award winners, all that stuff, their entire world is built on the way things used to be. But our technology has moved all that stuff forward. It isn't what Netflix does or doesn't do in terms of their releasing. My friend, John Rogers, he posted this, and I agree. You guys are stupid. Either Amazon or Netflix has enough money that they could literally just build a theater in New York, Chicago, Houston, and L.A., and Paris and London, not feel the pinch. And literally run the movies they want to run there for free if they want to. And whatever rules you want to change about how soon or late a movie gets to be aired, go to the Netflix theater. You can literally first come, first serve. You get your tickets, whatever. They could do that. If you want to play that hardball game with them, the technology allows for them to do it.
They technically could. I mean, to me, I think the conversation isn't really about Do you watch it at home? Is it considered for Emmys? Is it considered for Oscars? I think it's about viewing habits. I mean, there was an interesting conversation that Spielberg and Lucas had about 10 years ago now, when they said that the theatrical experience is going to go the way of the opera, because I think that the public particularly now with this generation that was
too much interactive. That
wants to. It's not even that. I think that they evade group social dynamics. I think that they feel more comfortable like alone and in solitude.
Yeah, it's weird. I was talking to some ladies about this in terms of dating.
Because the thing that I mean, this is a question that, you know, we always talk, some of you always say that you and Josh and Akilah, you guys get together
and we go watch horror movies.
And you go watch a movie. Yeah. But how many people binge watch a TV series with a group of people?
No. Hardly anybody. You have to have them over to your house to do
Yeah, that. Yeah. And people don't go over to your house.
I watch, and Lisa, who's not here again, she and her friends do this. They will choose a show, all put it on at the same time, and then binge watch it publicly watch the movie publicly and do what they do live tweeting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. And it makes sense if you're like all over the world and your friends are in, you know, Istanbul or someplace. Yeah. But it's an interesting thing because there's something in our psyche that's happened in the younger generations where things that I think about when I was talking about dating with a group of women I happened to be around yesterday at a meeting. And I was like, you know, I haven't been dating in 20 years. I've met my wife. I've been married with her almost a quarter century now. So my idea of dating is wildly out of date, which is part of why I have a young friend, so I can keep an idea of what that's like for them. Mm-hmm. But there's so much with these, like these apps.
Tracy swiping, just got married. Was a little young.
Swiping
young.
Left, swiping really right, right? That Grindr and various other, Tinder, I guess, different things, right? And I'm like, you guys are commoditizing yourselves. You're making it basically like, I can understand if Grindr's just for hookups, right? Because then you're looking at body types. You're not going to spend more than 5 minutes with this person, really, an evening, Tinder, all of that. But if you're looking for real stuff, there's a part of going out that doesn't seem to exist anymore or it's faded away, which I used to think of like this. I would go to a club. And I was almost always with someone already. I'm a serial monogamist. I was generally not at the club to meet a girl, right? I like dancing, so I'll go to the club. Sometimes the girl I was with would be with me because she also liked to dance. Sometimes the girl I was with, whichever one, didn't like dancing, but I really did. And she knew, oh, this idiot, he's just going to come home to me. Yeah, go dance, whatever. But all my boys are out. Right.
But you could dance with your boys back then.
I'm saying, right. But I'm saying they were all looking, right? Yeah. So I got to sort of observe the dance that I wasn't really participating in. And what I noticed was there's a small segment of people that a first jam that comes on that's good. Let's say a room full of 100 people, maybe 20 of them run out on the floor and start jumping around.
Oh, right. Definitely.
Everybody else is hanging back.
Yeah.
Male, female, doesn't matter. Hanging back because I don't look stupid.
On the hunt.
Right?
Right,
on the hunt in a way that's kind of like, but I don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything that embarrasses
the club
me.
The club heads run people. To the floor.
Right. Everybody else is like, rap music, let's go. Exactly. Right. Also, I would dance, and back then it was all gangsterish, so it was like crip walking and whatnot, right? So like,
y'all bitch,
dance like Jeff a Crip thug, to dancing like a thug with these hard ass chicks, right?
Hit it one time.
No, I'm old now. Those days are over.
The blood walk foot. Come on now.
But as soon as I start talking, girls like, oh, you're not thuggy enough for me. I need to go, right? But if you're out looking for chicks, that could be embarrassing and defeating for me. I'm like, whatever, girl. I'm gonna be out here anyway. Play some more music, whatever. But the point is, all of these little apps and things like that, they help you avoid the potential embarrassment of failure. That's all it boils down to. And going to the movies, how many times you go to the movies, somebody's talking. I literally, like, don't make me come back there. I drop the bass, you know, all that stuff. Oh, shit, there's a big black guy about to come back here. You know, unless I'm armed, I better watch out, you know, like that. Which is stupid because I'm never armed. I could get shot doing that shit now.
Exactly.
But you don't have that experience at home. You either talk if you like to or not, right? And if you don't, you don't, whatever way. Mm-hmm. Now our screens at home are gigantic and cheap, right? So it's not quite the same as a movie, but it's close enough.
Movies
cost $20 for one person.
Well, see, this is the thing. To me, I think that what the cinema experience, the theatrical experience is trouble because it costs so much money.
And it doesn't need to, by the way.
It doesn't need to because if you're worried about the theater chains making money, then the theater chains are making money off the concession stand.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in that chain is being extra greedy by wanting the price.
It's greed.
Like that high.
It's greed. It's straight
up
greed.
But at the same time, you've like driven away a certain amount of people to say that I can't afford to do this. But I also think that it's like people don't enjoy going to the movies because
it's out. It's not the movies. It's out.
It's being out. It's being out. You know, because you know what I was. I remember. You know, I used to be all these other stories that people would say. Oh, you know, I fell in love with the movies. So I used to go with my grandmother during the day or something like that after school. Mm-hmm. And it's like if you go to any theater. And you go to the daytime screenings, right. It's empty.
Yeah.
It's empty. Definitely. And it's really sad because it's like, you know, people could be here and be watching stuff and they're not because they don't want to be, because they would be gone. And they're
right? If you owned your own, like, they don't really have a lot of these anymore, but you had your own, like, it's Jeff's movie theater, right? Mm-hmm. You could do stuff to offset that. You could have all kids day, right? Mm-hmm. Where in the daytime, mm-hmm. after between 3 and 7, you're not even showing the mainstream movie. Mm-hmm. You're showing, you know, a revival of Incredibles or something, right? Which is stuff that used to happen, by the way. This mm-hmm. is exactly what used to happen. But mm-hmm. the increased corporatization, increased centralization, increased widgetizing of all products. Every product starts to turn into just widget X, mm-hmm. right? And we've got a model and this works or whatever. You know, they cut minutes off movies, not for editorial reasons, but just to get more asses in seats per day, right? And then they release on the DVD, well, this is the director's cut or this is the alternative cut. I'm like, no, this was the cut. And it's great, and it made the movie better, but you opted to...
Because you want the money.
You want the potential of those extra seats filled, but the problem is what you just said. They're empty. So you're not really getting that money. You're just cutting, you know...
It's because, I mean...
Not a greedy. You're right. And I can tell you from having worked for the company that owns the very popular theaters here.
Oh, we used to work there, didn't we?
Sure. Well, here's the fact. Like, I was in marketing, but I was very close with the purchasing manager. Mm-hmm. And his biggest concern, like, this kept him from sleeping at night, was the fluctuating cost of popcorn in a commodity market because it was going to affect that concession
expense.
That's what you were talking about, right, Chris?
Okay.
Yeah.
The employees of the theater, they may get a nickel or a dime above minimum wage, so the mm-hmm. costs aren't there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we know the licensing and the arrangements with the theaters,
I mean, the movie
or the studios. But it's hard, you know, they can't accept that the business changed, right? This goes back probably 8, 9, 10 years. But once that happened, the economics changed so drastically, and they couldn't at all account for the streaming and where we are today. Right. It's like adjustments have to be made.
And they're giant. These are giant. I call them dinosaurs, not to be mean, but they're literally the difference between a small mammal, mm-hmm. which is Netflix.
That's right.
And a dinosaur, which is set up to work in a completely different environment and can't really adapt quickly enough to how things have changed.
Well, yeah, because Franklin Leonard put something interesting on tweet yesterday. He was like, what would HBO lose if they took the final two episodes of Game of Thrones finale and put
made
them
movies.
and put them out as so it was a 2 hour, it was a 2.5 hour experience or so, and they put it in the theater for a month before it's as an exclusive window before it aired onto TV.
Nothing,
you know,
not really.
They would make more money.
They'd make more money. Right. And it'd be a more interesting experience.
And people are going to watch it anyway.
Because the thing about it is that, like, this is the thing I always feel people, like, just don't get because they're so into watching things on their small screens is, I remember when I was with Lisa and we went to, I think you might have been there too, when we went to see the episode one or the pilot episode of Westworld.
Oh yeah, right.
At the theater?
Well, we saw it at the theater. We saw it at CAA their theater at their thing. And it was such a remarkably immersive, interesting experience seeing that show on the big screen. And that's not really a big screen, but it's a big enough screen. It's a movie screen. And then I wanted to see that. And then when I saw episode two at the house, and even though I have like a 50-inch TV at the house, it still felt quaint.
Wasn't the same, you know.
And I was like, this is what people. I mean, I was trying to emails with your girl, Sue. What's her name at the Getty?
Sue.
And I was telling to her, I was like, you know what? The things that really turned me on about one of my things about art that I actually just loved is that when I was in high school, I was a big, you know, like fan of Renaissance art, you know. And there's this guy named Albrecht Dürer, who's a very famous German painter, and I loved his work, and I saw all his stuff. But I had a chance to go see these paintings he did called The Four Apostles in Munich at the museum, right?
Okay.
Now I've seen these paintings before in a book, you know, in an art book, everything like that, and it's impressive, everything like that. But when you go there and you see that the paintings are 7 feet tall, you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, this is what this man did.
And
it hits you in a way like, oh my God.
That's a mountain.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow.
But doesn't that lend itself? What you're describing, though, is part of why the calculation has been made to basically do tentpole movies, right? Like, people watch a movie and go, do I need to see this at the theater? Well, I need to see Avengers at the theater, but I don't need to see this little movie about two musicians in, you know, in Biloxi in 1928.
But you can, because I remember a small movie like that is that movie, the Llewyn Davis film. That's the Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, Into the Llewyn Davis.
That's like, it's such a textured movie.
But I'm saying the average person.
That's right.
Right? They're going to be like, well, it cost me $20 if I go alone
cheaper,
to see this
cheaper.
Movie.
Well, make it that's cheaper. Right. And that's the other thing about when if you work in a theater or theater company, because we're in the business, you know, we have some purists. Chris is a cinephile to the core, no doubt. But they're thinking May and December.
Right.
May and December make the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Iron Man, whatever the tentpole is, that covers all those other months where the seats are empty in those daytime shows you reference.
That's where they can take the
reality.
Risk. They could take the risk all the way up to there because they know come May, December, they're going to make their money back.
Right. Well, holiday season.
Right.
And the summertime. Start of the summertime.
That's right.
They're not thinking about award season, quote unquote, in the same calculus,
right.
Because they gotta make up for those.
It's old way thinking. If you're trying, even if you're crazy greedy, if you're trying to make money, and you know we're talking about anecdotal evidence. Obviously, we go to these theaters, we find them empty. But we also live in Los Angeles. I don't know what goes on in Wichita, right? But
I thought you was from Wichita.
I know. I'm just saying. I get that a lot. But
country accent.
If you're running one of these companies. The old model is we'll just keep running them, right? If even one person shows up for the 2 o'clock show, that's 20 more bucks than we made with no one showing up. But some smart person is going to come in and go, well, look, what about the fact that A Kid Would Be King is a family movie? It didn't do as well as it should have, but everybody I know who's going to see that movie is like, damn, this is the guys who made Attack the Block. You all need to come see this movie. Mm. But people didn't. Mm. That's both partially marketing. It's a partial marketing
because
issue.
It wasn't a marketer to the guys who made
I didn't know that
block.
At all. I would have went.
But that's for grown-ups. But clearly it's a kid's movie, right? Or family movie. When can families go see this movie? Weekends? In the afternoon, maybe? Right. Maybe during the day right after school if mom and dad want to break out, although the economics don't really allow mom and dad to do that
sure
these
don't.
Days. But you know what I'm saying? Like, figure a way to split your ticket so that...
Yeah.
The movies that, and also charge less for that movie. So maybe the kid is what we called latchkey kids when I was a kid, probably just what kid life is.
Yeah, we would go by ourselves.
Right? That kid can afford to take, you know, mom, I want to go see this movie. Right. How much is it? $8.50. Go.
That puts your ass in the theater
at least 2 hours. I will pick you up after the movie.
Yeah.
Right?
But
don't go in there and break anything because I'll beat
But if
that
it's $20,
ass.
If it's $20, then
you're out.
But it is now. That's what I'm saying.
That's what you're saying.
I get a video game that I'm immersed in that I can play for months if I suck and weeks if I'm great. It's weeks. Right. For the same price, and the visuals are at least competitive.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? So compete or die. And what they're doing instead is sort of padding. It's like somebody sliding in the movies, right? They're sliding down the mountain. Man. They're just doing anything to grab.
They're going
to
have to die.
Right. Meanwhile, the next one's like, oh, I got this little metal spike.
Even if you sell off the theater, you start selling the real estate. That's still just a short-term response.
Yeah, because to me, I feel is going to happen. I was telling some of this guy. His name's Zach Stentz. We got to get on the show.
Zach is the shit.
Is that what I feel is going to happen is next time we have like a big recession, like kind of what we had, which is coming in the next like 3 to 5 years, or whatever. I think there's only going to be theaters in the mega cities.
You're probably right. I don't. What I would like, and it's a little bit radical, and I was surprised. I wasn't surprised John posited this, but if I was at Netflix or Amazon with their deep ass pockets, I swear to God, just to throw the gauntlet down and shut fools up, I would build my freaking theater in New York and LA, one each, right?
You do it in China every how many hours?
It's a dollar to see Amazon movies. It's right. $1.
That's right.
We're going to show them around the clock, and it's a dollar. On top of that, I'm going to pay my guys who work here twice what they work at another theater.
Because the thing about that is interesting is that I remember when MoviePass came out last year, mm-hmm. everyone was going to the movies a lot more.
Yeah,
it was cheap as hell.
Suddenly it was cost effective.
Cost effective. I'm gonna go check it out. I mean, like, I was, oh, you know what? 5 o'clock, I'm gonna go see a movie now. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna take off early, or I'm gonna go at noon and just work later.
And I went with a friend of mine. He's got a pass at AMC, and he's like, I get X number of movies. If I don't use them, I feel like it's a waste of money.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but individually, he's spending less money.
Yeah.
So
because it's an interesting kind of dynamic. I'm not sure. I mean, yes, I've seen a lot of movies, and I'm a huge cinephile. I would say that I've seen most of my movies on video because I've seen so many older films and so many foreign films that never came out in the theater. And it was occasion where I would see something in a revival house, like the New War, something like that.
Yeah, the Biograph in D.C., and I would go there.
It's something that I had seen before, but I wanted to see in the theater. I wanted to see that experience. I will never forget when I saw this movie called His Girl Friday. Howard Hawks' film, His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
I saw it at the Egyptian when the Egyptian first reopened after the thing. I said, oh, I'm going to see the movie. I love this fucking movie. It's so amazing. And I remember there was shit in the movie that I had never seen, even though I'd seen the movie like 3 or 4 times on video. Because when the screen got...
Did you lose the...
No. What happens when the screen got bigger... Like the images that were, because when that movie was made, when they didn't have TV, so everything was going to be a 50
fill
foot
up
screen.
That screen. Right.
So there was stuff in the deep background,
stuff going on
that you
or it'd be blurry.
Yes, you don't see it on your. This is so lewd. You would never do this in a movie today, but it's so hilarious. There's a scene where they're in the press room, in the prison. And they're all talking and screaming about so-and-so's gonna die. Blah, 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 stop the presses, stop the hanging, he's escaped, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a lull because the guy, the convict has escaped. And everyone's like, what do we do now? There's no story, what do we do? And they're just all sitting out and moping around. And these two guys just like they walk into the deep background to smoke a cigarette, right? They're sitting there by the window to smoke a cigarette and just way in the background. And out the window, you see these two women walk up the stairs with skirts on. And these guys lean out to
and
look.
And that's not the point of the scene.
To look up their skirts.
What?
And I was like, this is in the way, way back out of the movie. And I've seen this movie 4 or 5 times, but I've never seen this part because it was too small to see. And that was on a 25-inch TV, not on my little iPhone where I wouldn't even see those guys.
My wife watches movies on her little freaking like iPad thing, and it drives me nuts. And I can't like harass her about it. I'm like, how can you watch anything on this thing? I mean, forget a kid doing it. 20-somethings do this crap all the time. She's my age. Right. I'm like, how is this satisfying to you? You know?
Because you guys are watching the movie differently.
It's convenient.
She's just watching it to view it.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are analyzing it.
Well, no, but I'm watching a movie just to be watching a movie. I mean, the thing about watching stuff on like a tablet is it's like I'll watch TV shows on the tablet. Because the TV show,
it's just a little TV.
It's designed for that, and the boundaries that it can push artistically are limited to the boundaries that the showrunner like wants to allow to see happen, what could actually happen. Mm-hmm. And the problem I found now more and more when I watch stuff on a tablet is I'm only going to watch 10 minutes of it at a time. I'll like take a show that's 40 minutes long, just cut it up over 10 minutes because I've got no really, if it's not compelling enough for me.
And that's the thing people who make this shit.
Yeah.
You kind of have to divorce yourself from who is the ultimate end user of the thing you're making, because if I put all my guts into something like that, and Chris is a cinephile, he is like the Captain America of going to the movies, okay? If he's capable of going, you know what, I'm gonna break this into 10-minute bits.
With TV shows all the time, because I feel like it's designed, I mean, like the narrative structure is designed that way. But also I'm just kind of saying to myself, it's not a cap. It's no captive audience. I don't have to watch this. I could get up and go to the room, or I could go turn on a podcast, or I could do whatever I want. But if I go to the theater, I gotta watch this. It's rare that I'll watch something all the way through. I mean, I did the other night. I was dumb enough at like midnight to turn on the fucking Wild Bunch that was on Netflix.
What's wrong with you?
And I was like, what the fuck am I doing?
Why would you start the Wild Bunch at midnight?
I don't know. I just wanted to see what it looked like because I'd seen it in a while. The last time I saw the Wild Bunch was before the Arclight was the Arclight, and it was just the Cinerama
Dome,
and it was the theatrical print that had just been restored because this was a rated X movie when it originally came out. Yeah,
violence.
It was violence. It originally came out, and they had cut it down. And I was like, I said to myself at the time, I first said, I was like, I'm never gonna watch this movie until they restore it. And I would see it all the time at the video store. But I was like, it's not the restored version. I can see it because it's cut. Fuck it. It's wrong. It's been censored.
I could never go to a movie with this.
It's been censored. The movie's been censored. Fuck that. Watch the movie as it's supposed to be. Because you know what? They shot it. Put it out originally, so that's why I started watching it again at midnight, and I was like, next you know, it's like 2:30, and it's wrapping up. And I was like, fuck yeah, this movie came out in 1968,
yep.
And it's holding my attention for 2.5 hours.
Let me ask you this, midnight. Though, how much of this conversation is similar or identical to the conversation that happened when TV showed up, when it really first showed up, where people could take a TV home? Because there's a lot of conversation when movies came out, it's going to destroy the theater. And when TV came out, nobody's going to go to the movies anymore. They're going to sit home and watch TV. And here we are in the future, living in the future, where people have all that in their hand, in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
What I feel like is we're in a moment where people are still shifting in how they're going to adapt. I don't think movies are going anywhere. I don't think TV is going anywhere. But I do think that this sort of weird, like, digging your heels in to make it stay the way it always was, it's just... give up. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
What year did TV come in? Was it the early 50s?
54 is basically came out.
Maybe I was wrong. I was thinking about there were some big movies that came out around it. I was thinking about like Giant and Rebel.
That's the movie industry going, hold on. Y'all need to keep coming to the movies.
Yeah. Right.
Straight up. They were like, this is competition.
That's why they have color movies because color in the movies was out since the silent era.
Right.
But it'll cost prohibitive.
Cost effective. Right.
And then they were like, fuck this TV.
The Wizard of Oz changed it?
Our conversation about black and white, the year the Wizard of Oz came out, that was like the first movie. That year, I think the year before that, Gone with the Wind were the first two movies that came out that were color. That everyone was like, oh my fucking God, like, what is this shit?
But then it was a competition of what kind of color processing. That was literally a selling point on the movie. Right.
Technicolor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, like, what could you... I mean, look, I mean, you're absolutely right about that conversation. And people will always kind of point to these kind of metrics, like, well, you know, like the movie attendance is down from 1940. Of course it is, because people are, you know, compared to like now, because people are not going to go because a huge job of it happened because of television. Yeah. And
it was the culture to go to a movie.
If you drop Pong on a 1940 audience,
I guarantee
you they'd be home playing Pong.
You know, there was that, you know, and you know, I mean, like people, when people make those metrics, it's like they don't talk about television and they don't talk about color television, because people kind of forget like the draw that movies have for about 15 years or so was they had color and TV didn't. Right. And then when, because color TV didn't really become ubiquitous for everything. I mean, you see a few things in color,
right,
like the shows, but the news was in color a lot.
Right.
So, I mean, was it black and white still?
Cheap.
Is that until the mid-70s, where everything was in color.
Speaking of color, I was watching recently, finally, I got a chance to watch that Mr. Rogers. So I've seen it twice.
That thing's heartbreaking.
It's so amazing. But it's so fascinating to me. He was on PBS making this cheap little show that was international.
Yeah.
And it was because he had heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He didn't care about no bull crap. So, and those of you who've seen it, I didn't know this, but he had to go in front of the...
Yes.
Congress. What is that? The Congress? And pitch to them why.
Right.
And his
Why do we need funding? Why do you keep needing to fund this?
Yeah. And it's funny because they showed everybody going before him and he was like, I don't want to hear any more of this reading crap.
Yeah, I'm going to tell
you. You know what I mean? Tell me, somebody be real with me, basically.
Yeah.
And he just got up there, he saw his notes and he went, Okay. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And he just went in.
Fred Rogers was a G. Don't get it twisted.
Do not.
Y'all need to watch that.
Just because he wore that cardigan doesn't mean he wasn't.
He's an OG, man. OG.
I was bawling in that movie so many times, especially when he sung with the little boy.
But he, like, the whole thing with the black guy, and they washed their feet together. But, like, this is a person who stuck to their vision. He literally... He was the punkest motherfucker on PBS. He was you guys don't get it.
That's real punk.
He's a punk from way back. Damn. Punk, pre-punk punk.
Yeah. Okay. You newbies, so we don't forget.
Right.
Like, all of the films, the titles, Chris and Jeff rattling off. If they don't sound familiar to you...
Write them down.
Google them.
Yes.
Look them up. Become familiar. Is useful information. You need to know.
I might put,
if you don't know,
I put up trailers on my Twitter now. Random ass trailers that people I know have never seen this shit, and I'm just like, y'all need to check this one out.
Right.
Also, some of them, what drives me nuts, and I still don't know why. Can't get the Fabulous Baker Boys on iTunes.
Really?
Can't get.
Oh, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you.
It's
I'll,
the music.
I'll
t- it's the music. Music. Fucking music, music rights. Fix that. Mm. What else? There's a movie called Rough Magic.
They're not going to
find Princess Caribou.
It was the Flamingo. The first thing I heard about
Flamingo
this,
Kid.
I was talking with right before what's his name died. Gary Marshall Gary died. Marshall, when I met him at the DGA that one time
tell
when
me
I
he was
did
great.
That thing. Such a he was
he's
so cool.
He was like Frank
nicest
Capra.
Guy.
People don't get it. He you was know, like Frank it, freaking it was, Capra.
You know, like we're sitting there getting ready to go into the DGA thing. I've told this story before, but we're in the green room per se, and he's there, and he's just being a friendly, nice guy. And I'm like, fuck, it's Gary Marshall. What the fuck? I mean, you're too cool. But when you're talking about the Flamingo Kid.
That's why his career lasted so long.
Yeah.
Because he was so cool.
Yeah.
He was so likable.
Like, damn it. Yeah. That's
Ron
what
Howard,
my problem
Ryan
is.
Granger, all those guys, Spielberg, they
no
are the
No wonder
nicest
I can't
guys.
Get arrested in this town. That's
you're an asshole.
I'm an asshole.
You gotta be smart. Gotta be smart.
It's too late now.
Yeah, so.
I got a brand now.
Yeah. But I was asking about the Flamingo Kid. I said like there was never like a DVD for what's the deal with that? And he was like, well, they did a deal at the time for the music that just for the that it was very onerous for them to even get the VHS rights on that on music, and they'd have to renegotiate the rights for subsequent masterings or subsequent formats, which would be streaming and DVD and stuff like that.
And it was perpetuity.
And the music people are worse than the movie people.
Was that Tribe Called Quest lyric?
Yeah,
about music people
are shady.
Don't joke.
But is that not just that?
No. Music was a how did it say?
Record company people are shady.
You better take that to the bank.
But it's not just that. Is that the
can't
I mean
that.
People complain about there's no money in the movie industry anymore. There's really no money in the music industry. So they're up here just trying to like squeeze whatever dollars they can.
But
in
look
the
at
situation.
The look, I, okay, that's why we can't do it again with the stripping to the music industry. Everything ultimately starts to serve the artist, and that's what the problem was with conglomeratization. Is that the biggest thing that people keep trying to gloss over. This bitching about Netflix doing whatever. Netflix is providing a venue for people who could not make movies, could not get their movie seen, could not get any kind of distribution. That's because right. Netflix does not give a fuck. They're just like, you got a movie, we got space, go.
Right.
Let's make a deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of crap
out
there.
Yeah, if it fits in their mandate.
Right, there's a lot of crap. But there's also a lot of amazing shit that
amazing
you never, ever, ever see
amazing
if not for Netflix. So I can see very much a person who's like, well, I got my 8 Oscars. And who's this little punk from Venezuela with their little weird thing about the ducks and the thing? And and Netflix put them up the week
probably
before
the
Oscars.
Best thing since.
You know what? You better strap on your six guns. You better
strap on your six guns.
I think he's the best director out right now, in my opinion.
Who's that?
So, what's that how you say his last name?
Alfonso Cuarón?
I think he's the best director.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
See, I've heard things since there's things in the wake of Roma that really disappoint me.
About him? I don't care.
Personality,
unless he's molesting people or breaking the law, I don't care.
I'm talking about, like, apparently there's a controversy about who was the cinematographer on that movie.
Really?
There's controversy.
Because he has a camera, too, right?
Oh, he's claiming it was just him.
He's claiming it was him when that on the call sheets there was someone else who was listed as a cinematographer who didn't get anything. So that there's complaints on that. There's a woman who sued New Line and Warner Brothers over Gravity because she sold the rights to Gravity comedy in 2000 about a woman who's on a spaceship. The ship gets blown up. She gets it's basically the same, basically gravity. And the project, like, when it was a book she wrote, and the book was adapted, and it went into turnaround when New Line was bought by Warner Brothers, and Alfonso Cuarón was attached to direct it beforehand. And then 10 years later, he said, "Here's my
movie. Came up with this thing." Oh, that's fucked up, yo.
So I don't know.
Alfonso, what's wrong, man?
So there's
now we got to say,
so there's questionable
movie
things.
Company people are shady.
There's no reason to be like that.
It's questionable.
There's no reason to do that.
It makes directors on a whole look bad.
It's not good.
It's not good.
So it's something that didn't come up because there's a whole thing about, the thing about Roma is sitting there saying, he kept sitting at speeches. I kept asking myself, so what would Chivo do? What would Chivo do when I would do this? And I was kind of like, is that like a good statement to make? I don't even know anymore. It's questionable. I still think that Inari 2 is a little better.
Okay.
I think The Revenant is one of the most awesome movies I've seen. Okay. The longest time.
I want to see.
You're probably right. You have a better eye than I as far as we're looking. I'm just looking at the frames that I'm seeing. I'm just like, I haven't seen this shit.
I just want a flatter field. And I hate to break it to everybody, as much as we hate Amazon, as much as we hate some of the things that these big companies do, they flatten the field. There's a lot of voices that are getting heard now. Okay. On a wide global scale that would never have gotten out of their little art house world or out of their little local four-walling, I'm doing it myself world that these venues provide. The game is literally changing as we watch.
Look, I get that, and I don't have a problem with that. I mean, that's the one thing that I applaud. I mean, like, I've seen more foreign TV, which is primarily what I watch now. I don't really watch American shit because it's too sensationalized.
Everything you watch has Berlin in it, doesn't
it? Yeah, I know. Basically, you're just living in Germany right now.
All those shows are the shit.
But there is shit.
Black Earth Rising. Holy jumping shit.
It's awesome material. And I just say to but see, this is the one fear that I have about Netflix. And I see this because you see it in is that you see it with what happened with the video store. It's gone. Video store is gone. And the plethora of type of films that you could see is gone, and it's the curation. But the fear I have with Netflix is, and this is what will happen, is that monopoly power. Because I feel that, because I've heard people tell me that even just the last 18 months, that Netflix has slowed down acquiring original content.
They're making their own
stuff. They're designing their own stuff. So that means that this diversity that we've been celebrating, that's going to disappear.
No, it won't. And here's why.
Right, but from Netflix, because I feel that this is the thing that I don't like, and I don't think the current system really works either because you know what the problem is. But I don't like the fact that you have is the potential for monopoly power. That could happen.
Yeah. Here's what will really happen.
Because there's money involved, so you know that's the situation.
First of all, their primary business model is as a clearinghouse, right? Everybody says, we're the Netflix of such and such. It's because Netflix just put shit up.
Right.
And yes, they're going to be actually making their own product. We'll see what happens with that. Yeah, okay, they become a studio in a sense. Okay, great. Shudder exists, right? Marvel's putting up their platform. Warner's has got the DC thing. They're probably going to do some other version of that. Hulu exists. What's happening is everything serves the artist, which is never a bad thing when you're creating these sort of projects. Everything that involved commercials, nothing against the people who make commercials, nothing against the people selling their products, but they forced changes into how we tell stories that hurt the ability to tell a good story, which in theory, the good storytelling is what makes us watch your damn commercials. So figure a way to not break what we do so we can help you do what you do. They didn't want to do that. Cable shows up, as you saw on my Twitter thing, and changes the game. They remove the need for commercials. So all of a sudden, I don't have to worry about commercial breaks. I can just tell a regular story. I don't have to worry about I don't even have to worry. I can shoot people in the face. I can show people having sex.
The content can be whatever I wanted to do.
Up to a point. Things are much more extreme with Amazon and Netflix and all that. However, it's also smaller. Everything's a niche now.
That's true.
Right? So all the things that I used to think of, that's geek stuff. well, geeks are niche, and there's sub geeks, right? There's right. I'm a geek for this. I only like I only like anime that involves tentacles that isn't pornography, right?
And I've got 10 shows for you.
I'm saying, right?
I do have 10 shows for you. So there is
that weird ass description I just made up. There's enough people to start a channel for that.
I get that. I get that. But see,
you're going to see the democratization proceed because of the commerce aspect, even if what you're worried about monopolization from Amazon and Netflix. Yes, some version of that will occur, but they still have to feed that public now, right?
They're
not
going to
go, well, this
that.
Is an Amazon show. They don't care about
that. No, they don't. But to a certain degree, this is what I was telling you. This is where when I'll become Karl Marx and we'll jump into our next discussion.
We'll do that.
Because I always the thing that it goes back to my thing about the Wild Bunch.
No.
You fucking censoring the content.
My God.
And fucking
he literally has a Captain America shield up. He's throwing it around the room.
He's on one today.
Because I feel that I feel what's happened in the last 10 years is there is a censoring of content per se, because I think there's less foreign cinema coming to the shores that you know about, because the thing that Netflix does that they're great at, and I love this, is, and the same thing with Amazon to a certain degree, is that they know how to market the fuck out of shit when they want to. What they choose to say, this is what you got to watch,
right?
And people are gonna watch it. Like they did that with Bird Box to no end,
right?
You know, but you know, I just kind of feel like that's where. Because I just have this whole thing, the middle class, everything like that, is just an anomaly of post World War II, and I feel that the everything is arcing toward monopoly and oligarchy. That's just what I would say, hegemony. Because because last week and all this kerfuffle.
Go ahead, judge me. What street they live on? Where they at?
No, okay. Because think about
next to oligarchs.
So yes, they are.
Germany.
That's the cul-de-sac around the corner.
Yeah.
But see, so last week when everyone was complaining about the thing with Green Book winning and stuff like that, there was this thing in the press I kept reading about, and I was like, and this could actually fucking happen.
Hmm.
There's a rumor that Apple was going to buy Netflix.
Really?
Because they can. They're sitting at $50 billion.
Definitely.
And I'm just kind of like, so, you know, and I just feel like, okay, because we know that Disney now owns Fox. So Fox's kind of like its outlier line with Fox Searchlight is probably going to dry up in terms of what type of stuff they put out, because it doesn't follow the ultimate Disney brand. And I think, you know, I mean, and it's like, that's what I see is going to happen.
Well, I mean, net neutrality covers all of this. Either we keep it or we don't. If we don't, you're right. We're fucked.
Yeah.
If we do, then what you're just describing is still the same thing that happened with the studios.
Yeah.
Right? The original studio system is trying to recreate itself on a global scale.
Right.
And that's fine. But what happened to the studios? Individual people, and it's easier to do now than it's been in the history of mankind, just went, I don't give a fuck about you, MGM. I'm about to go make this. I'm gonna be Orion or have you put it out.
Yeah,
and like there's networks like Quelle TV. Verve is one.
It is a lot. It's just an interesting time
for this monopoly over here for these guys to blow up. Is like Quelle is a good example. It's small. They're saying we want to be the black Netflix or whatever. I'm not always a big fan of like we want to be the gay or we want to be the Latin or whatever. Some people are more on that. I'm a little more like everybody should get to play everywhere. But while we have the system we have, it makes perfect sense for someone to be I'm the black, I'm the Latin, I'm the gay thing. Quelle's trying to set itself up that way. Now, there's not a lot of – they don't have a lot of eyes on them yet. They don't have a lot of product. I mean, the product's good, but it's limited because of money, basically.
Right.
But let's say Netflix becomes one of these things, and Apple buys Netflix, and they're like, well, we only want to do Ron Howard movies. Everybody works for us, makes a version of a Ron Howard movie, even if it's not Ron Howard. Now, I don't dislike Ron Howard. I like Ron Howard's work. But if that's all your ass is putting out, I'm only going to be checking you when I feel like watching a Ron Howard-style movie.
Right.
But that's a hole. So at that point, Quelle makes some calls. Maybe they need to expand a little bit. They join up with TV One or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they're like a super group for a minute. Hopefully, it'll work. And product will be presented through that venue.
I agree with you, Jeff. I do. And I think my rational mind says, yes, I agree with you. But my irrational mind, like, just always, like, filters toward pessimism. And I just kind of feel like there's just, like, there's things that, like, for instance, like, again, last week, there's all the bub about, there's the Green Book. And I'm like, oh, but what people, but did you hear about what, you hear when Marvel flexed this muscle on fucking Rotten Tomatoes?
About Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
You know what? Good. Fuck those motherfuckers.
Yeah. I'm like, right. See, that's what's good. See, now that's interesting.
Okay, tell the people who don't know, like my ass.
All right, here's what it is.
So what happened?
Yes. All these.
Okay,
so let me be the Marvel guy for a minute.
You can be the Marvel guy, but it starts with Star Wars: The Last Jedi,
right?
Which is a Disney movie, mm-hmm. which is all, and because Marvel is also a Disney movie, they were saying that there was so much like online backlash about that movie from the brittle white male
dickheads. Call them dickheads. That's the technical term.
Yeah, that this was a social justice movie and all the justice warrior
they
movie.
They lost their shit,
and they lost their shit, yeah.
and they tried to boycott.
You know, but the thing that Disney then feared is, did they upset the audience? Because that's why Solo underperformed.
That isn't why Solo underperformed.
Now, but you people, I mean, it shall be not, but there's that conversation. Mm-hmm. So now they're having this thing. Captain Marvel is approaching release next week. Mm-hmm. It's on Rotten Tomatoes. It's being burned alive.
Well, wait. Let me jump in. They have this advanced thing on Rotten Tomatoes, sure. Which is not, did you like the movie you already saw? Do you plan to go see this movie? And if so, why? And if not, why not? Sure. Right? These dickheads, and it's a problem in our industry because people are lazy and don't really have time, so they put a lot more importance on a vocal minority than they put on box office, which mm-hmm. is all they should ever be looking at. They always talk about, we only care about the money. Mm-hmm. Well, then why are you listening to the dickheads? Mm-hmm. Just look at the box office, right? These guys don't want to see a movie that has anything to do with the promotion of women. Right, Captain Marvel, the version of Captain Marvel that we're getting from Marvel is a modified version of the original one from the 70s that has been largely in the hands of women for the last decade, and that's why the modifications are sticking in these
guys.
And
it's successful, right? because the male version didn't last. They killed them.
Another thing. These are, by the way, you punk-ass motherfuckers. I've been reading comics since before most of you punks were born. I was there when Captain Marvel showed up as Miss Marvel the first time around.
That's right.
She was a feminist from day freaking one, so kiss all my ass with that.
Because Marvel's done.
Right? So, and you really want to. And then there's Monica, and there's all this other, right? Bite me with all your little fake-ass shit, okay? But what they realized was they failed with the Star Wars boycott. So they've got their little organization together, and they dived on Captain Marvel with the advance. We suck. This is going to suck. Blah, 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 blah. And it starts to take the score down. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of this issue, just look at the advance ticket sales. It's breaking records already. Mm-hmm. Okay? You guys are going to lose this, but you panic people in our industry because they give Twitter and they mm-hmm. give Rotten Tomatoes so power. Much importance because mm-hmm. they're sort of too mm-hmm. lazy to do their own market research, or they're going to count that as market research, mm-hmm. which means these little punks can game the system, right? Mm-hmm. They can make themselves look bigger than they are until the box office happens, right? They try to do it with Wonder Woman. People forget. They try to do it with Wonder mm-hmm. Woman. They wanted Black Panther to fail. Really? That's a billion point nine points of you failing.
Right.
Okay. Every one of those dollars is you failing because you suck. Okay. Your point of view is not the point of view. I'm talking to the dickheads who are listening to this, of course. But that's what it is. And that big kerfuffle that's been going on caused Rotten Tomatoes to go, you know what? Marvel was like, can you? Probably. We don't know for sure. But
we're like, let's twist your arm real fast. Turn this off real quick
because we don't have to let you have access to any of our shit if we don't want to. Mm-hmm. We are the biggest entertainment company in history. Mm-hmm. You know what? Let's get rid of this, mm-hmm. says Rotten Tomatoes. And there's a little bit of screaming about it. But you know what? Who cares what you plan to see or not see? The whole point of the site, right, is I went to see it. I liked it. You should go see it. I went to see it. I didn't like it. You shouldn't go see it. And ratios,
right?
Everyone's going to see this movie. Everyone's going to see this movie. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be great because mm-hmm. Kevin Feige doesn't fuck up. The worst Marvel movie is still great, right? The only thing you can compare it to is other Marvel movies. Okay? So you guys lost before you started. You should stop. Either don't go see the movies you don't like.
Mm-hmm. That's my thing. Like. That's my thing. Don't see the movie that you don't want to see.
Yeah, that's how you crush them. Numbers.
The thing about Captain Marvel is that movie, I remember when it's the same thing I kind of felt when I saw the first Iron Man trailer, which was if they can get this one thing right, then it can, then the whole thing can like take off, you know. And I feel when I saw that, I was like, oh, they got this right. They did this part correctly.
You mean a trailer did a job that a trailer's supposed to do?
Well, it's not necessarily that, because I feel that there's a moment of it that could have failed or not or not has been as strong.
Right.
But I think they just like got that kind of balance, and it's the thing that I've been asking for since the second season of Heroes.
Oh dear God.
Which was
I love this man.
He's on fire.
Which is I want to see some cosmic shit.
Yeah.
That's the thing about comics that I think is the best shit about it, is the cosmic shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute that they get the cosmic shit right, that's not the joke like it was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but
Avengers came close.
It came close. But the full, but Captain Marvel was full on cosmic shit.
Yeah, there's no way
and
around it.
That shit is dope.
Yeah.
That shit is dope.
Time travel, space travel, aliens, shit, galactic, you know, empires.
All that shit.
Come
yes.
on, man.
Marvel's in the house heavy today. Yeah.
Somebody put up this thing on my Twitter again. I mention Twitter a lot, even though I hate it. I also love it because there's lots of...
You're only on it all the time, too.
People think that. I'm also working all the time.
You got no job.
That's
no
how job. Good I am. But I get to see a lot of different points of view, right? There's a lot of smart people in my feed. I don't know what y'all feeds are like. And one of the things was they were like, what if Alien came out right now in this culture?
As it is.
Exactly the same, but you never heard of it before. Would we be getting a lot of shit about the feminism of Alien?
Oh, God, yeah.
He's the only survivor and all this other shit, right? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
You assholes would be like, this is another one of those SJW blah, blah, blah. Where are the men? How come the men all failed? Like, dude, it's
Paul
Alien. Reiser's
character treated her a certain way.
Right.
Well,
it's Alien, motherfucker.
Yeah,
what's wrong
that.
With you?
I mean, it's like, you know what I always say all the time is like, people kind of forget... Or they don't even like notice. I just reminded this yesterday because I saw something with Schwarzenegger. We had this Conan thing, and I was like, Schwarzenegger's Conan was a diverse as fuck movie. Villain is a black guy.
Right. His best friend is Asian.
Is Asian, and is you know, and the woman who saves, and there's a woman who saves his life, sacrifices herself for him.
Right.
And the person who teaches him shit is Asian too. The damn director, you know, and the people who are fucking up.
Who are they? I wonder who they might be. And what's weird is, wasn't it a? Was it Borman?
No, it was John Milius.
John Milius. He himself, not the nicest guy in the world, but he made that movie.
He made that movie, yeah.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. On that note, interesting. So you know what I'm going to call this episode?
No. I don't even have a notes for it.
It's fine. We'll figure it out.
Huh? This goes off.
No, it's probably going to be like...
Netflix and dickheads.
Avengers 5.
It's going to be like Cinephile chopping
up. I heard
up
they're doing shit. The Eternals next.
Yeah, with a gay lead.
What?
With a gay lead.
Look... When they announced they were doing Guardians of the Galaxy, old ass comic head like me, I was like, wait, what? What the fuck is wrong with these people? Guardians of the Galaxy. So after they made that shit work so beautifully, so sublimely, please do the Eternals. Do anything you want. They almost make me want to watch a Howard the Duck movie, and I fucking hate Howard the Duck.
I want to see the Squadron Supreme now if they're going to...
That's Justice League. It's just a riff on the Justice League.
Justice League didn't come out. Something bad came out.
Let me ask you guys
Justice
a quick
League
question.
Stop it.
Let me ask you guys a quick question before we go. We're all writers in here. We're all Writers Guild writers. How do you guys feel about the writers' rooms they do for like Marvel and stuff like that?
Oh, you mean for the movies?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a feature guy, so that's just my life.
Mm-hmm.
I talk a little bit about it, not with Chris, but with another one of my Cinephile friends on Twitter. Part of the thing that has caused a couple of directors, I think, this is my opinion, I don't know, I have no backstage knowledge. I'm a TV guy, for one thing, and Marvel's really secret about how they do their shit internally, so we don't. None of us know what the others are doing. But... basically, the Marvel movies work like TV shows.
Okay. I mean, completely.
They have a basic idea, apparently, of sort of a way they want to go. They'll hear a lot of pitches, right? But what's probably happening is the directors will come in and pitch notions, or writers will come in and pitch notions that sort of fit accidentally with what they kind of plan to do anyway. And oh, you're the right one. You're synced up, and now you'll go write it beautifully.
Okay.
They don't tell the writer that.
Right.
Then the directors come in, and in film, the director is the king. Right? A film buy is because the director is really the guiding mentality of any movie, or at least usually is. But in the Marvel movies, they have a larger issue at stake, which is brand protection. And story integrity, where once they realized that Iron Man was just a movie, people forget that. They did not know all this other craziness was going to happen. But they set it up that it could if you wanted it to. And since it's happened, now they have to sort of be coherent. They can't go too far. Like, your Thor movie can't change Thor, but so much.
Now protect the universe.
Right. All, now you're protecting old tone. As an individual director, Chris Derrick comes in. He's like, he's got a tone. He's got a kind of movie he likes to make. Maybe he's a perfect fit for Moon Knight. I'm just throwing that out there, right? But Moon Knight, yes, for this individual Moon Knight movie, Chris is perfect. Mm-hmm. But we may have plans
for
Moon
Knight.
But
he's not going to fit into the whole thing.
Right. Character connectivity. Right. It matters.
Chris gets irritated about halfway through production, like, well, wait a minute. This isn't what I signed up for, right? I signed up for to make a Chris Derrick movie that involves Moon Knight. I got to go. It's fair, right? Because that's not how movies usually work, right?
That's true. I mean, and that to me, I think that even from Jump, the Marvel people have not, and it's no slight on all the directors who have done their films, but they don't choose the type of guys who are kind of like these 800-pound gorilla like filmmakers with their own idiosyncratic vision.
Well, that's why I say Team Panther on my show. It is a team. You're a team Marvel when you join crew.
Yeah, the scripts can be however, but you know what? It's like you would never get a David Fincher doing a Marvel movie.
No chance.
You would never get a Spielberg. You would never get these guys that everyone who's like the name directors don't get that shot. And it's not
because are you mainly saying people who usually have Final Cut? Is that why?
No, it's not okay. A question of that. It's that every Marvel movie looks the same. It's like you said, it's basically like a television show.
But on the other hand, the Russo brothers show up, and
but they're mainly television guys, and
so they can work in that structure. Yes, but they also put their stamp on Captain America in a way. Right, like that Winter Soldier movie still remains the best Marvel movie.
That's true.
And
that's
because it's a fucking movie.
That's true. Hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, because those guys originally came. But I feel that, but like, I say this all the time. He's dead, so I'm fine with it. Tony Scott is not getting a Marvel movie. It would be amazing if he got one.
But they wouldn't ask him to. They wouldn't want him to come, right?
Yeah, but I think that. But see, that's right. They wouldn't. But the thing is that that's what I kind of loved about the comics. Is the comics like someone who had Tony Scott's vision as a writer and artist could come in and say, "I want to like a small run on Batman."
But look what happened
something like
with,
that.
But you see what happened with Warner's. They did take that approach, and look what happened.
I don't think what's his name is that you can put him in the same breath of those other people.
They gave a guy who had a vision. Well, two things. They had Nolan. Perfect fit for Batman.
Right.
Perfect
fit.
And director fit.
And he had a vision.
And he had a vision, and it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, up to number three, because I don't know what y'all were doing with number three. But whatever. God bless you. Bless your hearts. But Snyder, all meanness joking aside, wrong fit for Superman.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not going to disagree with you. I don't think he's the right. I mean, I
liked his zombie movie, and that's it.
Right.
But even regardless of whatever my feelings about the rest of his work, he's the wrong guy for Superman, but that's not how Warner's works. They want their directors to have what you're describing. They want them to come in and make their movie. So within that context, everything he did is totally legit because that's what they asked him to do.
Right, and it's just the wrong guy. But now, it's like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing that's what Marvel does, that Marvel doesn't go and cherry pick these guys like a, you know, whoever it is. I mean, I just kind of feel like there might be something interesting to play around with. It's like, I kind of push that all the time when we talk about my friends and I talk about Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. The coolest Harry Potter is the one done by Alfonso Cuarón because it doesn't look and feel like the rest of them. But stylistically, it actually embraces the themes of that movie in a way that the other films
that particular book, that particular person.
So it's just it's just something I kind of wrestle with as a creator. I'm just kind of like, as someone who loves to see what fascinating people do, is that are they going to get that shot? Because I think it would be cool. I don't know if it would happen.
Well, Ava DuVernay is about to do The New Gods.
Right.
Warner's still doing her thing. She is not a cookie cutter director.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I would want to see someone like Guillermo del Toro get involved in like a Marvel or
Justice League Dark fell apart.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what? Here's what I think about.
But
I want to see. I mean, both I love the Marvel style movie.
Yeah.
I want to see that. Pardon me. I want to see that. But I want to see people making up new shit. I want to see
I want to see the new block, shit anyway. I want to see the new shit more than anything.
I want to see a story about, you know, witches in Los Angeles fighting demons and, you know, Aztec demons in the sewers under L.A. I want to see that freaking movie, right, that I never heard of and don't know who any of the actors are. And, you know, where did these people come from? I want somebody to start their new thing. Like, remember Highlander? Right. Or when Predator came out.
Well, fuck Indiana Jones. Well, Alien. Lost Ark. Yeah, who is this shit?
I call India pastiche. If you go watching those old serial movies, they did a lot of copycat.
That's true. Okay? That's true.
Predator, Alien, Terminator, Attack the Block. These are movies that could be franchised out. Some have been. The Matrix, right? Let me see more of that. Like, Marvel's got their shit covered. I don't need everybody clamoring to try and get into their on their team. And I love their stuff.
I love their stuff too. You're right. To me, it's not a question about your question about the writer's room and everything like that. I think that works really, really well for Marvel because of what the game plan is.
Yeah.
I think that if they were to do it where they allowed everyone to be autonomous, I don't think the projects would work as well. I think the whole thing with Marvel Comics in general is that Stan Lee was like Stan and Jack were doing all that shit together, and it was like, hey, this is and it all kind of integrated. So it's part of their internal core.
They had strong, talented editors in chief for the beginning of their comic book run. They had Stan for a million years, Shooter for a million years.
And Roy Thomas is in there for a minute.
Each one of these people had not only the chops to do the actual job of making comics, but they had clean visions of what the company meant to do underneath them.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
The normal thing in Hollywood is more what is going to make money, right? Who's the hot ticket? Who's got the cool, sexy idea like that? And that's the way movies are generally made. Marvel lucked into this weird, like, feeder movie, like, people don't understand. The Avengers movies were something that had literally never been done in the history of film, right? We built up with all these other movies over almost a decade to lead to a movie that everyone's like, oh, shit, here come the event. They're going to put them all together. God damn, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew what that was going to be. I can't imagine the pressure they were all under. Mm-hmm. A single director having just their vision for that? I don't think anyone wanted that. I don't think even Whedon wanted that. I think that needed to be a team. Right.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I know that that's something that he walked away from ultimately, but I think he handled the first one as strongly as possible.
Yeah.
because everyone involved, what's her name, Alonzo, and all the people who worked with Kevin Feige, they were like, you know, I think those people were all on board with it. And I kind of feel like there was this, I was reading this interesting book called, I forget what it's called now, it's called Culture... Something about like the reason why there's success in groups and stuff like that, and the reason why there's failure and success, and part of it is the reason why there's failure a lot is when people get older trying to do something that's together, they worry about their status within the group. And I feel that at Marvel, they're like there's people aren't fighting for status within the group.
Same with Lucasfilm, where they have their story group. People never talk about the story group, but the story group is, I think, all women right now.
Is it?
And I don't have any problem with their output. Like, there's a certain sort of fan that makes a lot of noise about how they're mad that so-and-so's, you know, Rose Tico is in there, and oh my God, where are these Asian people come from? Or how come this black guy is getting all this stuff? And I'm like, don't go to the movie. Lucasfilm don't need you.
That's right.
Not at all.
And the whole rest of the world likes this, so go watch those movies that don't have us in.
Because
y'all motherfuckers can go all day
on this forever.
I don't know why we're talking so much.
You asked the questions.
I don't know why.
You know what's going to happen.
It's the cinephile chopper.
It is the rant room.
Yeah. Exactly.
Literally, it's the name of the show.
So where you at, Tracy Grant?
At The Real Trey, TheReelTray. Hit me on Facebook.
You still teaching them
help you get
goofy?
Your life right if you're a goofy dude. For real. I can help you with the ladies and all of that.
Nice.
But holler at us, and thanks for checking us out. I know there's new listeners and people have been with us for a while. Mm. Aside from Hilliard, the captain of the ship, we all appreciate you checking in.
Thank you. Where you at, Jeff?
I'm at Winterverse on Twitter. I changed my handle.
You're not Jeff Thorne no more?
I'm Jeff Thorne, but it used to be Game of Thorns.
Oh, right.
That's over now.
Since that's over.
Winter has come. So, Winterverse. And JeffreyThorne.com is the easiest clearinghouse. Just go there. Links to everything.
Okay.
Please go to the NAACP Image Awards site and vote for Black Panther's Quest.
Yes.
So that we can win that little statue, because my team deserves it.
For sure. For sure.
Definitely.
Every day. You can vote a lot. You don't have to vote once. This is one of those times you can multiply vote.
Awesome. That's what's that. Where you at, Chris?
Shadowboxercinema.net and at UnauthorizedCBD on Twitter and Instagram.
That's what's up. Cool. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Please go on our what, Chris?
Our Patreon page. There will be a link in the show notes, because donation is love.
Yes, of course.
Donation is love.
So support that. We appreciate it. We also have a Facebook page that we post every once in a while on. And shout out to Lisa Bolacaja, wherever you is, girl.
Please come back, Lisa.
Yeah, do
she said she had some issues with her car or something the other day. That's why she didn't show up on Wednesday, but today's Sunday. Anyway, I said it. So anyway, shout out to Dashani sitting here listening with us.
What's up, Dashani?
Dashani, like the water.
See what I'm talking about?
You knew that.
Yeah, right? I'm just shouting you out.
I didn't say anything.
I know, but
just
making sure
it's
Dasani.
Dasani.
With a J.
Dasani. Dasani Drew.
Okay. Like Dasani, he's been saying.
Well, see, I thought I said it right, and then you corrected me and said it's like the water.
Then I shifted it to the D, and it's like, no, it's a J. Whatever, man.
Group chat.
There'll be a link to his information in the show notes.
Just spell it out
so
right.
So don't worry about spelling his name.
You're going to look in the show notes from now on.
You know what? You're not getting a mic now. That's for that, you're not getting a mic.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolacaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.